Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Harnessing Your Wealth. I am your co-host, Cade Peterson, and I've got the honor and privilege today to be interviewing Billy Peterson and Sean Peterson. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Cade. Thanks for doing this today.
It's good to be back, Cade.
Gonna interview these guys about money in motion events. So it's very common in our industry to be helping our clients with when they have a money event that comes into play. And we often refer to these as the three D's. The first D is divestiture. And that is an action or process of selling off a business interest or selling an investment of some sorts. The second D is divorce. Unfortunately, this is very, very common in our world today. And some of you might know that we have a company called Utah Divorce Planning. And we help people with the financial implications of their divorce, selling off their rental properties, getting rid of 401ks, transferring them to an ex-spouse, dividing pensions, that sort of thing. We want to talk about that today. And then also death is the third D. Never a fun conversation, but a common one in our industry. When you die, your money is going to go one of three places: to your heirs, to the IRS, or to charity. So we're going to get into that as well today. So to kick it off, I want to ask first question here to Billy. Tell us a little bit about divestiture, selling a business. What are the options there and how can we avoid taxes?
Well, these are good questions, Kate, and I thank you again for being our host today. We've had a lot of clients over the years as business owners, and it's one of the things that I've found that I have a pretty good skill set in helping people not only build their business, but maintain it. And then finally, either transfer it over to the next generation or potentially sell it outright to an interested buyer. I've had dozens of clients who have gone through that process. There's a lot of questions that come up when people are considering selling their business. One is the tax implication, as you mentioned. How should the deal be structured? Is it beneficial, not only in the short term for the tax consequence and from the buyer's perspective? There's two main ways, whether we're talking about a stock sale or an asset sale, and each have their own pros and cons, we'll say. What we want to do is find the deal that works for both parties. But if we're representing the seller, we're going to lean toward the best deal for the seller. And a lot of times it's more of a personal decision than anything. If you think about it, it's selling something that's meant a lot to you over the years for most people. And I'll say there's the rare occasion when somebody starts a business quickly, has no intention of really getting emotionally attached to it, and then selling it without any feelings of regret whatsoever. But for most people, it's more than that. It's a lifelong pursuit. It's a dream. It's something that they show up, put all their time, effort, blood, sweat, and tears into. So changing that lifestyle or agreeing to get rid of that and move into a different chapter of your life is not an easy decision. And I say that the emotional aspect of this process is as important as the financial aspect. So I want people to go into that with the right frame of mind. Just selling it and then getting that cash, it's a one-time event. But then what? And so we have to walk through all those scenarios. And when we're selling a business, we want to make sure that we can replace that income. So that's where we come in and talk about all the different strategies, the portfolios, after-tax consequences, and how we're going to replicate the income that's been realized from the business over time. Hopefully, the reasons to sell outweigh the reasons to stay. And we've given the owner the ability to detach and move into that next chapter and live a long and happy life with reaping what they've sown.
Yeah, I think it's common for people to get into selling their business and they think it's extremely difficult and timely, and they're not really certain, like you mentioned, on how they're going to replace their income. So Sean, ask you, what are some strategies that we use to help our clients replace their monthly income after they do sell their business?
Well, if you're a client of ours or you've been listening to our podcast, you know that we're really big on financial planning. And so I think you start there. You start plugging some numbers into the financial plan. We use a system called goal planning and monitoring where we're able to say, okay, here's our low value, here's our expected value, here's our high value. And then based on those, you know, net after tax numbers, we can say, hey, is this working into what your financial goals are, what your spending goals are? So I think we start there and determine that probability of success. And that can even help, say someone doesn't know what their business is worth. We can start with, well, what do you need? We can back into that number and say, well, what do you need to replace the income that you were receiving from this business? I think that's really the first place that you want to start. As far as strategies, you know, we have a lot of different models and strategies that we use here. We need to factor that into with the income that we're replacing and also the client's risk tolerance. Because remember, their business has probably been their cash cow for the last 10, 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. So it's different now. Your paycheck isn't coming from the business operations. It's coming from your investment portfolio. So you also need to have that conversation with a client to make sure, hey, mentally, you need to be prepared for this. We're going to back test good markets, bad markets, make sure we can get through different cycles. And then we're going to invest the funds accordingly with their risk tolerance and their financial goals. And, you know, if the numbers don't work, I mean, it might be some bargaining power to go back to the buyer and say, look, this is what I've got to have. The other thing I've seen lately is a lot of these private equity firms coming in and making offers to the business owner saying, okay, here's the offer, but you need to leave X amount in this, in our firm, in the private equity firm. And I caution that a little bit because all the projections I've seen, they're outstanding. You know, we're going to get 30% year over year growth, and the seller of the business is looking that wide-eyed and saying, oh man, this can be great. But there's risk in that. I mean, whenever you see those kind of numbers, you've really got to peel back the curtain and say, is this feasible? Do I really want to leave that much money in with the company that's buying me and in hopes, because typically those shares are illiquid. So you're leaving it in there in hopes that you can get it back out. So if it's me, I like cash in hand. I want my money, then I can decide what to do with it. And if we're following the financial plan, I think it makes it a much easier decision.
Yeah, to follow up on that, Sean's right. In this day and age, most of these firms, they want to consolidate a whole bunch of smaller companies into one larger company. And in doing so, they know that in order to continue to fund their buying spree, they need capital. And the capital can come from banks or it can come from money that they'll get from these additional acquirees. So one of these sellers ends up leaving a chunk of money on the table, let's say. That's money that goes back into this business. So then you're trusting this new set of managers to run it. And they might not do it the way you did it. They might have completely different ideas on how to run your business and all the other ones. They might not be as conservative. They may be taking more risk. And again, you are now exposed to their decision-making. You're illiquid. And it can maybe not work out the way it's projected. They're always showing the best projections in order to keep you excited about staying in there.
And emotionally, if you're like ready to be done, retired, well, you're not. You're still reliant to how that business is doing. And that can be just as stressful, well, probably more stressful because you have way less control. You basically sold your rights to how to manage the business to this private equity firm. And, you know, I'm not bashing private equity, but I just think it's something that people definitely need to consider. Is that the right move for them? Leaving money with the firm that's buying them or just saying, hey, I want to be out and be done.
Yeah, those are great. Thanks for the insights there. On the divestiture side, you know, we covered the business and selling the business. What about if someone's selling some property, land that they have? We often find clients get in that cycle of, I'm going to do a 1031 exchange and I'm going to avoid taxes. What are the benefits to a 1031 and why would you recommend or not recommend that somebody do that?
This is a big question. I think people get this idea that their entire life should revolve around avoiding tax sometimes. So every decision they make has to do with the implication of taxes. So they always call their CPA. And we find that oftentimes clients will call their CPA long before they call us. And the CPA is important, but I will tell you this, the CPA is going to help you avoid a percentage in tax. Your financial advisor potentially could help turn that transaction into a lifetime income stream if managed properly. So I would say they're at a minimum on equal footing. And from my perspective, there's even more importance that should be weighted toward the financial decisions from the sale, not just the tax. And we even see people doing that with, for example, funding an IRA. They might be sitting on hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars of cash, and they don't want to do anything other than fund an IRA to save $6,000 or $7,000 from their income. I just think that's short-sighted, extremely short-sighted. It doesn't consider all of the implications for your net worth and your overall wealth and your overall well-being. So having said all that, this idea of 1031 to keep kicking the can down the road is just that. Sometimes people make terrible decisions based on nothing more than avoiding the tax. So they finally get an offer on a piece of property or a building that they've owned, and they get out from under that, and then they go right back into an illiquid asset because the 1031 requires the seller to buy a similar or like asset. Now, there's times when it makes sense. Okay. If you're selling a business because, hey, it's great price, somebody wants it more than you do, or you're moving, something obviously triggered you to decide to want to sell it. But remember, real estate has its place, but I am very reluctant to encourage clients to continue to have huge portions of their net worth locked up in real estate because of the illiquidity.
Right. I wanted to comment on how clients will call their tax advisor first in a situation. And remember, some CPAs, I'm not saying all CPAs do this, but their job is to help minimize tax. So they're only looking at how can I help them minimize tax? And the answer in this scenario is, well, let's do a 1031. They're not considering the client's other needs. Like, does it produce income? Do they need some liquidity in their life? Good CPAs do. And that's where they get us involved. And they say, hey, you need to talk to your financial planner too, because it's not just all about the tax. It's about, what are your goals? What are you trying to do with your lifestyle? We can help minimize some tax. You may not avoid all of it by doing a 1031, but what do you gain from not doing it? I think that needs to be considered too. And good tax advisors and financial advisors will look at the whole picture, not just how do we minimize tax? Because sometimes that's not the right answer. And like you said, Billy, you're just kicking the can down the road. Someone's going to pay tax eventually. So the 1031 just kicks that can down the road, and some people find themselves owning assets that maybe they wouldn't had there not been that tax implication there. And so they're letting that wag the dog, and they really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good time to transition into our second D, which is divorce. So Billy, I want to ask you maybe briefly as a two-part question here, if you could tell us a little bit about why you started Utah Divorce Planning. I don't think we've talked about that on this show before. And then also how we help clients and regular people navigate the tough times of divorce.
Divorce is not fun. Let's just say that. With divorce, there are going to be high emotions, negative emotions, fallout, sometimes hatred, vitriol, and extreme animosity for years or even life. I went through divorce as a child when my parents were divorced, and I know what it did, what kind of devastation it had on my siblings and me. And then, wouldn't you know, I went through a divorce myself as an adult, swore that I would never go through a divorce, swore that that would never happen to me. But it did. And I saw how painful it was, the experience was for myself and for everyone around me, my family, my children. And I felt like it was just something that was kind of a fire burning in me, is how to help others. Because when I was going through my own, I never found I never found anybody that could do what we do, which is help people make sense of it all from a financial standpoint, answer questions like, am I going to be okay now after this is over? What are the right division scenarios? Which scenario is the right one for me? Which assets make the most sense for me? Should I try to keep the home? Does that help me or hurt me over the long term? All these questions. How should alimony be structured? Is alimony possible? What should my budget look like? Can I afford to do certain things? Do I need to get a new job? There are more questions than answers at the onset. And so when I was scrolling through a magazine one day, many, many years ago, and it was not long after I'd gotten my own divorce, I noticed an advertisement for a certification. It was called Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. And it was offered by Institute for Divorce Financial Planning. And I thought to myself, now there's a unique certification. And I had already had my CFP, my Certified Financial Planner designation. And I just felt like, hey, that's another area where we can help. Because honestly, I had had a number of calls from clients who experienced divorce or were planning going through divorce and needed to have questions answered. And I knew enough based on my own experience, but I didn't have that expertise when we're talking about division scenarios and tax implications and can certain things be even divided. But I think I bring something that's a little bit more unique in that I understand the emotional consequences of it. And I believe I can relate to people from a level that a lot of other professionals cannot. So we pride ourselves in not only helping people understand the implications financially, but helping them deal with that emotionally, helping them see the world as not scary and see it as something that they can move forward with some level of confidence. And that's what I think we do well. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah, if I could add one thing, I think what we see commonly with the divorce clients that we help is that one party has no clue what's going on with their finances, and it's usually the woman. The man is so heavily involved with paying the bills, taking care of all of their investments, and the woman doesn't really care because everything's handled. But when that time comes and they get divorced, she's kind of left out, stranded, and she doesn't know where to go. So Sean, what would you say would help people and that would prevent that from happening in the future?
Well, I have two daughters, Cade, you know this, Billy, you know this. When they start getting into the dating world or thinking they're going to get married, one of the first pieces of advice I'm going to give them is you keep a handle on the finances. You need to be involved. It should be not just one person handling it versus the other. But like you said, Cade, more often than not, it's been one person, usually the breadwinner that handles all the finances. But if you're struck with a divorce and you maybe are not aware of the finances, this is the time to do a little bit of work. This is the time to sit down and go through your own budget going forward post-divorce. And we help with that. We sit down and we know what reasonable expenses are, and we can put together a budget, show a need for alimony if that's what we're coming up with. But you're starting there, and then if you're really, really just blind to it all, we have the questions to ask. Where does your spouse work? Do they have a 401k? Have they worked other places, maybe rolled over into an IRA? Have you ever met with a financial advisor? Do you have an investment account somewhere? So we can help start digging, and then we start formulating and building this net worth statement so we know where all the assets are. Also, attorneys will, they're going to have them do a financial declaration. Documents can be subpoenaed if we need to. So there's more in-depth ways. Obviously, those are more costly ways when we're going, if we have a spouse that's not being forthcoming with the finances. But we can dive into that and really help build this net worth statement. And then it helps that person really understand where they are financially right now, pre-divorce. And then our job is to show them with these different division scenarios, this is what your life's going to look like post-divorce. Are you okay with these scenarios? Because ultimately it's the client's choice. It's our job to show them the picture. And then show them any red flags that maybe they're not thinking about. And then it gives them so much more information to make a better decision when you're in a mediation or you're negotiating with a spouse. Just really helps with all of that. And yeah, the CDF, I'm also a CDFA for the last 5 or 6 years, and it's been one of the best designations I think I've achieved too.
I'll piggyback one more comment on this topic, sure. Cade. And that is that the three basic ways for divorce, we can help with all of them, whether that's a contested divorce. In other words, hey, we're going to lawyer up and we're planning on taking this all the way to court because I don't think that my ex-spouse is being honest and they're not being fair and I want what I want. And so it's going to get ugly. We've represented clients in that capacity. That's the least fun. We've also represented clients where it's more of a mediated, hey, we want to get this resolved, but we need a little bit of help. So we're going to go kind of get a mediator, go back and forth, talk to one party, then go out and talk to the other party. And typically we'll help get a resolution there because we show the scenarios in plain terms, very, very user-friendly, illustrative terms on the screen. So the scenarios can be updated instantly based on a new proposal. And it's very helpful because we show projections on these things, not only just today, how it's divided, but what is it going to look like for each party 10 years from now based on growth rates, tax implications, and the future contributions toward those accounts and income streams. And third, the most, I think, friendly approach to divorce, where we're trying to keep everyone working together and hopefully have a relationship after divorce, for the kids' sake primarily, is the collaborative approach. And that's the approach, if any of you are listening today and you're thinking about a divorce, you have a friend, family member, that's the approach I would try to nudge them toward. Obviously, you have to have a collaborative team. And that's the idea, is everyone working together. No one's in a separate silo. Everyone communicates at the same time. When we meet, we have conference calls. It's all in the same room. So people are heard. It's not the approach for people that are trying to hide things. It's not the approach for people that are quick to anger. It's the approach for people that have some sort of stability with their emotion and they want to do the right thing. They're trying to get through this without hiding things, screwing the other party over, or making it difficult. And I would say that the children benefit more than anyone. Key points to start looking at if you're thinking about divorce: start gathering up copies of your financial assets, including any life insurance policies, credit card statements and debts, any mortgages, any other vehicle debt, loans, etc. Know what you have, know what's going on out there. Always keep an eye on things. Even if you're happily married, have a working knowledge of what's going on in your life, because no one goes into marriage thinking they're going to get divorced. And I'm not trying to plant that seed in your mind and start that energy of divorce is coming, but you never know what life will bring you. So being informed is going to put you in a much better situation.
Yeah. Thanks for that, guys. Let's move on to the third and final D, which is death. And we try to lighten that up a little bit and call it end of life planning, because death is such a strong word. But I mentioned earlier, you know, it goes to your heirs, goes to the IRS, or goes to charity. So what do we need to consider to make sure that our money goes where we want it to go when we do end up passing away, guys?
I'll jump in first, if that's okay. I think another area that we focus a lot on when we're talking about wealth management is this topic. When we're talking about advanced planning, we want to make sure our clients have these things buttoned up. What's going to happen with your money in the event that you died, whether it's unexpectedly or from just long-term, just old age? Everyone's going to die. So we just don't know when. And I think a helpful part of planning is to make sure that you've considered what you want your money to do after you're gone. Who's it going to go to? Do you want to designate charities as part of your estate? Do you want to just designate all your children equally? Well, that's fine. But what if a certain child is part of your business, works for your business? How's that going to look? Are they going to inherit the business? Is that going to be an equal distribution when you consider the other assets that need to be now distributed to the remaining children? Oftentimes it's not. So there needs to be some thought put into that question. What do you want to do with spouse? What if it's a second marriage? What if they brought children into the marriage? Are you going to leave your entire estate up to your new spouse? What if he or she decides they're not a big fan of your children? And then they have all the power, so they take them out of your estate. That's more common than you think. So you have to make plans and provisions for these contingencies that could happen, issues that could arise. Also things like, hey, we have a child that has a disability, whether it's mental or physical, whatever it may be, do you have the proper planning done to take care of that child? Lots can go into it. So there's so many things that we need to consider when you're talking about your estate, and it's never too soon to create your estate plan. The most basic form is the will. Have a will, because that's just going to tell the courts where your assets are supposed to go. That doesn't take probate out of the picture. Probate still won't be involved. But if you want to go to the next level, that's when you create your living trust. And a trust, then you name trustees who carry out your wishes and who assign the assets, gather up all the values, work with the courts, work with all of the other financial institutions, file your end of life tax return called your 706 estate tax return. You work with your accountant there. There's many things that go into it, but we have a very good working knowledge and a lot of experts around us that can help you create the plan that makes sense. And then ongoing, you just continue to update as life changes.
Billy, I just kind of want to piggyback off that, because you kind of talked about the client themselves. You know, what do you need to do to prepare? I want to step into, what if you're the beneficiary of an estate? Okay, you're going to receive an inheritance from mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, whatever it might be, and I'm going to go against the grain on this a little bit, because often you hear people say, don't make any decisions for at least a year. And even in divorce, I've heard that too. And I'm going to say, don't be careful with that, because sometimes decisions need to be made.
Right.
And I've seen people freeze and they're not able, you know, they're trying to go slow and make, you know, I would say maybe don't make any major purchases for 6 months to a year, but decisions have to be made. Okay. Right. Where are we moving this money? Are we doing a step up in cost basis? Is your estate plan done now? Do we need to prepare that? So when you're receiving an inheritance, you know, things change in your life. You're coming into a large sum of money. I think setting up a meeting with your advisors, talking about what's this going to do for me moving forward before you run out there and say, okay, I'm quitting my job, or I'm buying this house, or, you know, I'm putting this in a joint account with my spouse that I've had for 6 months. I mean, there's some big mistakes that can be made.
Yeah.
So I think sitting down with someone that's got, as a fiduciary, got your best interests at heart, and helping you formulate a plan going forward with this windfall of money or assets that you're going to be receiving.
We've seen cases where someone who was fairly young received a massive inheritance, you know, seven figures, eight figures. And I've had that happen, clients that we're working with, and all of a sudden, bam, here comes a huge chunk of money into their accounts. And of course, your mind goes, what do I do? What should I do with all this? And that's where hopefully your character has been already established, as far as, I'm not just going to be running out to spend this money as fast as I got it. You know, there needs to be some thought put into, how is this going to take care of me and my family for the rest of my life, maybe the rest of my kids' lives as well, if we manage it properly? Taxes need to be looked at. The division of assets with the siblings, all of those things need to be taken care of. Whenever we have a death, of course, there's certain administrative roles that need to be carried out. Receiving the death certificate is number one Obviously, we have to have that, a copy of that. All financial institutions do. And then we help our clients gather up other things that might have been overlooked. Sometimes mom and dad have a life insurance policy the kids didn't even know about, or an annuity. How many times have we been asked about that? Hey, what's this? And, you know, it's an old annuity company that they purchased years and years ago and forgot about. So we help them get through all of that, round up assets. If we need to contact Social Security Administration, file for those benefits. There's several steps that need to go in. And I think that's one of the biggest times a financial advisor shows the value and the worth and helps clients get through all of that. One of the things we're big on is helping people organize their life, what we call a wealth organizer. So in the event that a death does occur, everything is in one place and those beneficiaries know where to go and who to call and what assets are part of the estate.
Another thing we see is a lot of people, especially here in Utah, are very charitably inclined. So Sean, what are a few options that people have when they're wanting to give a portion of their money to charity when they end up passing away?
I think one of the best options that I've seen is a donor advised fund called a DAF in our industry. That allows you to put money into a fund, and some people will do it, you know, when they have an event like you talked about earlier, Kay, like a divestiture from a business. They sell a business, Uncle Sam's waiting there for part of his cut. Well, we could defer some of that business sale into a donor advised fund, get the charitable deduction in the year that we need it, and then donate money out of that donor advised fund to their select charities. So you're holding this big sum of money in the donor advised fund, and then every year you can pick different charities that you want to support. But the big point,
or just wait, not have
or
to
just
do
wait,
it
yeah, or just wait and let it grow, and then it becomes a legacy tool, and you can name your kids or successor heirs on that donor advised fund too. But the big point is, got the tax deduction in the year we had the large taxable event. I think that's one of the best tools. You know, some people want to just give outright to charity, you know, to whatever it might be, whatever 501c3. I get a little hesitant with that because you hear the stories about these CEOs of these charities and they took the money and they did something they weren't supposed to, and you've already gave them all your money. So why not be able to pick and choose and have more control over it? Now, you can't take the money back out of the donor advised fund, but you do get to choose what charities benefit from it.
I think sometimes in this day and age, Sean, that people with internet, especially in social media, and then they hear about a cause and everybody jumps on because they want to be a part of whatever cause they think is
noble.
Noble, yeah, valid. And it turned out this cause, although it sounds good, the money was not going where they thought it was going.
Yeah, it was fraud. It was a scheme. Yeah, got to be careful with those. But I think that's, okay, to answer your question, and it's so easy to set up. I mean, you can set up a private family foundation, but now you've got, you know, board meetings you've got to have, certain amounts got to go out of the charity every year. You got to file tax returns, so it can become very cumbersome. Donor advised fund takes care of all that. I mean, I think we can have those set up in 2 to 3 days. I know Billy has one. I have one. Pretty easy to get going and something that can be a really nice tax tool and create a nice legacy too.
With that, I think we'll wrap up here, guys. Appreciate you answering the questions. I enjoyed interviewing both of you. If you have any questions, all of you listeners out there, please give us a call. We'd be more than happy to chat with you. And if you haven't done so yet, you know, please follow our show. We'd appreciate that, trying to grow this as much as possible. So with that, thanks for tuning in and hope you all have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Harnessing Your Wealth with Billy Peterson. Before we declare the race official, please click the follow button so you can be notified when new episodes become available. For more information about today's show, please check out the show notes. Visit our website at www.petersonws.com or give us a call at 801-475-4002. Once again, thank you for listening. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Peterson Wealth Services. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning.